With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Welcome to Face to Face. This is a show about change and about what's next. It's a show that wants to ask questions, peel back the layers of our average everyday experience, and go beyond scratching the surface. We interview amazing people with incredible ideas and stories who have done wild, weird, and wonderful things. Remember that imagination shared creates collaboration, and collaboration creates community, and community inspires social change. I'm David Peck, and this is Face to Face. So my next interview is with Dev Ajla. He's here today to talk about his book, 50 Ways to Get a Job, and the subtitle of it is An Unconventional Guide to Finding Work on Your Terms. So this is going to be really relevant for a lot of listeners, I would think. And what I love about Dev and what I love about the book is it's really about leadership. It's about building community. It's about relationships. It's about Zen Buddhism. It's about meditation and spirituality. And he just brings so much into this book in so many different ways that's quite remarkable. And it's an easy read, and that doesn't mean it's not an insightful and deeply engaging piece that you're going to want to return to. I mean, this is about the practicalities and the utility of finding a job. It's about exercises that you can do, but it really is about your terms. This is about choice. It's about responsibility. It's about, at the risk of sounding a little corny, it's about actualization. And, you know, based on information gained from over 400,000 individuals have used these exercises over a period of time, Dev has come up with these methods. And you can dig into the book anywhere you want. And that's what's so remarkable and wonderful about it. You don't have to read it cover to cover. In fact, Dev's going to tell you why he probably doesn't want you to do that in the first place. So stay tuned. Coming right up, 50 Ways to Get a Job. Don't forget davidpecklive.com for more information about my writing and speaking, face-to-facelive.ca for a whole other list, and of podcasts, and TIFF coming up soon. And if you want to come alongside and support the work that I'm doing in a way, in a monthly way, in a yearly, in an annual way, you can do that through patreon.com. Coming right up, an interview, a very practical interview with a good friend of mine, Dev Ajla, 50 Ways to Get a Job. Well, welcome to Face to Face. We're joined by a very special guest here with us today, author and, I'm going to say, social change maker. Dev Ajla is here with us today to talk about his new book, 50 Ways to Get a Job. Dev, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
So it's an unconventional guide to finding work on your terms. That's kind of it's kind of an interesting subtitle, because isn't it really all about the employer? Like, right? I mean, what do you mean on my terms? Can you let's start there.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, so I wrote this book. It's made for people that want nonlinear careers. Part of the process for writing the book was doing research and looking at every career book that's been written since the 70s. And after reading and reviewing all those, basically realized that career advice really hasn't changed at all, except our careers have, you know, and the ways that we're building our lives have. And I thought that it was time to sort of reconsider what we need to do today.
I
I love the book, by the way. Congratulations. I hope it's doing well. I hope it's flying off the bookshelves in a variety of different ways. But I love the fact that you, and in fact, I'm pretty sure you actually suggest this to the reader. You know, don't just sit down and read the book cover to cover. You know, pick pieces, pick chapters. And I mean, it's the kind of book that you could read probably 5 or 6 chapters of the book, put it down for quite some time, and really take a lot from not only in a sort of a life lesson kind of a way, but a real practical way with respect to, you know, finding work.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a book to read straight through. It's a series of 50 short chapters that are 2 pages long that give you just all the practicalities from go to a job board and leave, to how to talk to a recruiter, to how to prepare for an interview, to how to think about your apartment, your space when you're in the middle of a job search. It's kind of... And it's emotional, you know, it's organized in this emotional way. So if you're overwhelmed, here's 5 things to do. If you are feeling like you want to meet people, here's what to do. If you're more introverted and you're feeling like wondering and asking the big sort of philosophical questions, here are the things to do. So we kind of move in between all these different states during the course of a day sometimes when we're looking for work. So it's, you can really jump around.
I've been teaching at Humber College for quite a while, one course a year, International Project Management, 65 to 80 students, postgraduate, all of them just dying to finish. I mean, usually I teach in the second or the third term. They're done, you know, they're ready to get out into the real world, as it were, and find themselves some meaningful work. There's a level of excitement there, and yet there's a deep level of cynicism as well with these students. Is that sectoral? Is that the 21st century? Is that just kind of where we're at today from a career perspective?
You know, we've seen this shift from stability-based career decisions, which is where I think some of that cynicism comes from. Is like, I don't know, there's no stability. Even the most stable things could be uprooted too. But the shift has happened to something that's more akin to learning-based career decisions. So people are making these decisions based on like, have I learned enough here at this job? Can I learn something else? Where do I need to move? Where can I feel like I'm growing? And people are actually making their career decisions based on it. And that's one of the ways that, you know, one of my favorite exercises in the whole book is a simple one, which is make a to learn list.
And it's don't you say, I think I heard you in another interview, or I'm pretty sure in the book you actually say it's the number one thing to do.
Yeah, because it's just all of a sudden it becomes an expansive moment. When you make a list of everything you want to learn, and then you ask yourself, what are the company's job descriptions, job titles that could actually pay me to learn those things? It may be a job in an industry you would never have thought of working for, or a job title you never would have thought, but it might be the perfect next job for you. And that's why I love it, because it's like this little quarter turn.
Right.
You know, just be a little more expansive so we don't have to just aim for that one perfect job that we're all aiming for.
I don't know about you, but I certainly grew up in an environment where, you know, my father had, I think, maybe two jobs, two careers. I don't know that I could ever say that I remember my dad saying, wow, do I ever love the work that I do, or I'm passionately motivated by it. You know, it was a pension, it was a paycheck, it was a dental, it was a benefit plan. It gave us a few weeks of holidays a year. And would you say those days are over? And I need to also toss this out. I just, you know, hanging out with a friend yesterday talking about a dental surgeon who apparently absolutely hates the work that he does after many, many years. Not the kind of guy that you want going into your mouth with a, you know, a sharp instrument. You know what I'm saying?
I hear you. Yeah. I mean, the reality is like, there are a lot of different ways of working today, you know, that are possible today that weren't possible generation ago. You know, that we can move in and out of short-term contracts, but we can still find stability, you know. And, you know, yes, there's side hustles and sharing economy and gig economy, but really there are actually real jobs that actually still have that stability. But it's how we think about our career and how we think about our next move and how we navigate the change every 5-6 years that really is the skill that we need today. And that's what I was really trying to get across. You know, how do you navigate those times of uncertainty, and what are the activities you do to get the momentum to find work on your terms, you know, that gives you the flexibility the amount of money you need, the stability you need, and gives you a chance to work on questions that you are interested in.
Dev, when you say on your own terms, you don't, and I don't think you mean it. I certainly don't hear it in your tone, but I don't think you mean from a, oh, I don't know, it's all about me perspective, right? It's more about, like, and I mean, like, in a selfish kind of a way. This isn't about pride. This is about actual finding meaningful work that's going to speak to you over a long period of time, which hopefully in turn allows you to be, you know, can I go a little corny, a better human, you know, give back to society, raise a better family, all those things.
No, exactly. I mean, my background comes from the nonprofit world. You know, as you know, we've known each other for a few years. And I ran a nonprofit for 12 years in Canada, and seeing that movement building, I grew up learning about that and being in that term movement building space. An idea that, you know, we can build a movement person by person, and it's those conversations moving people up that ladder of engagement. And when I came to write this book, a lot of that ideas was infused in this book.
Right.
How do you actually get people in this time of transition, in this moment where everything can be rethought, to take that one step towards rethinking their relationship to time, to money, to purpose, and to that pursuit of doing something good? And you don't need to, I thought about the book as like, I don't need to hammer it over the head and be like, this book will get you a job that does good. No, in fact, I kind of did the opposite, where I was like, let's just talk. But if you find work that is meaningful, that fits you, it is, and it can be so rewarding and purpose-driven and help move our world toward a place that is better.
I'd love to talk a little bit more about that background, that nonprofit background that got you to, I think, essentially launching 50waystogetajob.com. I want to hear more about that. But can you talk a little bit about the way you've sort of, I think, turned things on their head in a sense, because this idea of later on in the book, you talk about helping five, there's a chapter you have called Help Five People, the Dalai Lama and why selfishness and so on. I wouldn't expect that normally in a book about finding a job.
No, totally. I mean, the way that I feel the book has kind of turned the job search and really gives you agency back is normally when we go to a job search, you know, we apply online, we put our resume together, we wait for a response from some sort of black hole of, I don't know. And the book is about treating our careers as a way of answering a question. Our careers can be an avenue for inquiry. And whatever that question is, you know, it doesn't need to be some passion that you found that's everything and then you just redirect your whole life. It can be a small question that you're interested in right now. And then you ask yourself, how can my career, how can my job search, how can the event I go to, how can the person I interview, how can the book that I read next help teach me something about that question? And our careers end up developing as a result of the questions that stick around. And it's really hard to tell which ones do, you know, and predict going forward what that's going to be. But I feel like that switch of making our careers a way to answer questions is just so different, because it actually gives you the power. Instead of trusting some algorithm to choose your next job on the job board, you're actually in control of how you're doing.
Well, what I love about what you've done, Dev, is you've taken such a relational approach to all of this, and I'd love to unpack that a little bit. Can I quote something here for you from a chapter? Sure. Look for answers in unlikely places. Quote, answers arrive from unexpected places when you allow yourself to hold a question for an extended period. I love that. Hold a question for an extended period. It involves seeking an answer in different venues using multiple methods and approaching problems in unexpected ways, close quote. Can you talk a little bit more about that? And again, I mean,
yeah.
Like, is this really a book about finding a job, Dev, or is this about how to live a better life? That's what I want to know. Is this all masked in, you know, yeah, this is like there's a hairpin turn at around page 72, I think.
You caught me.
Yeah, that's right.
The idea of holding a question is so important. One of the things that I really believe is missing in our way of being, you know, we find a question and we Google it, we feel satisfied with the answer, but a different kind of knowing emerges when you hold hold a question for a long period of time. I mentioned this woman in the book named Barbara Brown Taylor, who wrote this book called Learning to Walk in the Dark. And the reason why it's a spiritual memoir, and the reason why I love that book so much, is she answers the question of how do you walk in the darkness through caving, like caving, literally walking in the dark, going to a garden that blooms at night, moving chickens at dusk when they're calm with her grandchild, and doing a textual read of the Bible, looking at everything that happens in the dark, which is all surprisingly very positive thing. And it's just this idea that you can, if you hold up the question, you end up with an embodied sense of knowing, a different kind of knowledge. And so often in our daily lives, we just rush, find a quick answer, and move on. But everything can be, you know, the act of going for a walk or going into a cave in her experience, or going for a hike, or at your workplace, can provide some answer to a question, no matter how far afield it is from that actual activity. And if you just hold the question, it doesn't take much more than just not letting it be resolved and looking for the answer in our daily activities. You end up with a different sense of knowing, and it will lead you to a different place and potentially a different career.
I love this idea of a different sense of knowing. I think we have this really myopic understanding of what knowledge is. You know, we're so hypnotized by numbers, and it's about data, and like you said, it's about algorithms and so on, and quite the contrary. It really is. It's so much more. It almost seems to me, Dev, like you've taken kind of a Buddhist almost. We need to be present. And really, I'm gonna come back to this, but this is really about not just finding a job. This is about a way of life. I mean, don't we want to be always holding those types of questions in this delicate balance, this tension? It's not just about finding a job. It's about, you know, how do you deal with stress? How do you deal with conflict? How do you deal with others?
Right. And I mean, our worlds are collapsed. Our job and our time that we spend is how we spend our time. And our time is how we spend our day. It's our life.
You know,
of course, these are all related. You know, of course, these aren't compartmentalized. Our work doesn't just have to do with how we get paid. It has to do with our spirit. You know, it has to do with the way we live. It has to do with how we think about time. It has to do with the relationships we build. It is our life. So when you're asking these questions, what I love about thinking about that moment when people are like uncertain about what is that everything is malleable, everything is at play, and we bring all of the life we've lived up to bear on that moment, and there's an opportunity to rethink it and do something different. And so that's why some of the questions really do have some of that philosophical side.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, you know, two pages over, it's like, here's what you need to say in the interview.
It's
that real balance, but that's the reality of our lives.
Well, you pretty much bookend every chapter with kind of a what's next sort of, here are five things you need to do.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So it ends up being real practical.
Well, I love that balance of deeply philosophical, interesting, narrative-driven stories. You know, you bring in the Dalai Lama and Buddhist thinkers and yet, wow, this is, no, you got to sit down and, I wanted to ask you about that one. You got to download your bank statement.
Yeah, I mean, that's a real practical trick. So the chapter about downloading your bank statement is, you know, really a proxy for doing anything you really don't want to do, whether it's like looking at a loan document or doing your taxes, whatever the thing is that you've been annoying or it has been annoying you, is setting a date, you know, that you are going to go for lunch with a friend at 12:30, and at 12:15, you just go and you do it. So you have 15 minutes. It's like you can't really get the activity done. You just rush through it, download the bank statement, get it on your computer, take a quick look at it, and you leave the house 5 minutes late, and you're off there to meet a friend. And all of a sudden, you're sitting with your friend having lunch, and you've already done the thing. You know, you haven't finished it, but you've done it. And it's just enough of a trick, mental trick, to get you motivated to be like, all right, I've overcome it. I can just get the rest of the shit done. You know, it's just enough. It's just enough. And it's like little practical moments like that combined with some of the more philosophical.
Well, and what I love about that is at the root of that to me is, you know, I don't know if you know, but my background academically is philosophy. Most of my listeners will know this, but I love the existential component to that because this is about choice and it's about intentionality and it's about better habits, really, isn't it? So it's not just about the like you said, it's a proxy for getting it done.
Yes, no, exactly. You found the subtext in the book.
So tell me about your past a little bit. I want to hear more about that nonprofit past and how it gets you to this place. Because near the end of the book, you talk about there. I think you have a chapter about when's the right time to work for free, you know. And I think maybe some of us have this sense that meaningful work really is when you work for a nonprofit, or it's when you volunteer, or it's, you know, joining your local Rotary Club. That's where we can find meaning and purpose and so on. But you would completely contradict that, it seems to me, and I'm looking at the homepage of 50 ways. By the way, folks, it's 50 ways to get a job.com. Check it out. This is kind of where it all started for you, in a sense, isn't it, Dev? This new approach,
yeah.
Or this different approach, I guess you could say.
Exactly. So I ran a nonprofit. We did follow up for youth conferences and youth organizing. So we made sure all the young people that went to these social change events went home and did something afterwards. And after doing that for a number of years, it kind of grew to the place of like, all right, now everybody that we've been worked with, a generation of Canadians in a lot of regards, and now they're looking for work and trying to find how to take all this meaning and purpose and bring it to work and not just, you know, quit doing good. And that led down the research path, which led to 50 ways to get a job. And during the process of doing that, my understanding of what good work shifted, you know, and I think this is what you're alluding to, which is, you know, I used to think it was all about just doing a nonprofit, working on issues, being a little bit of a martyr, being a movement martyr a little bit, and just really getting out there doing the frontline work. And my understanding of purpose shifted because as I even found myself in jobs at companies that were really making money and doing good and, you know, at the edges or the frontline of work, I was like, yes, that is a type of purpose. But there's also a type of purpose that comes from pursuing a question that's exciting and interesting. And this type of purpose shows up in academia, it shows up with artists, it shows up in all kinds of creative professions, but it can also show up in any profession. And the question, this goes back to like, how do you think about your career and how can our careers be a way of answering questions? But it gives you that sense of, so every day you can answer the question of what am I doing right now? What is going on right now? And if you can answer that question with like, I'm learning this thing because I really want this, or I'm pursuing the answer to this question, then you can recenter yourself and you know why you're sitting in that PowerPoint presentation for the first time. And it feels okay. It's when you can't answer that question of like, what am I doing right now? That you lose that sense of everyday purpose. Which is a little bit different than that, you know, that higher calling purpose that comes from like that nonprofit idea or the purpose driven doing good idea. But I really think those both need to happen, both need to be there. You know, so even if you're in a job at a nonprofit, you still need to be able to answer the question of what am I doing right now? And something else changes.
So is it you say there's sort of two sense, would you say there's two sense of purpose, or is that
maybe a different kind of purpose? I in the book I call it like everyday purpose, which is the answer to the question of like what am I doing right now, and then the other sense of purpose is our traditional idea of like doing good, making a difference in the world, but I think it also comes from having directionality, you know, which is that pursuit of a question. You know, if you have that sense of directionality, if you're moving, holding a question and trying to find answers, that is also, it's a way of finding purpose. My idea of purpose has expanded over the years.
Right.
Nonprofit too.
No, that makes perfect sense. Tell me a little bit about that bridge between, oh, I don't know, doing good and making money while you're doing good. This idea of social enterprise, social entrepreneurship, you know, people, planet, profit. Is that, I guess, could I say that road narrowing? Are we doing more of that? Are we thinking about that more as a younger generation? Are my kids going to be looking to change the world while they make a full-time living?
You know, it's funny because, I mean, I wrote a book called Making Good in 2012, which was really sort of champion social enterprise. And it's right at the time that all the Tom Shoes and all the, and like Honest Tea and there's all these companies, Recycle Bank, that were coming up. And what we've actually really seen now 10 years 15 years later, it's like, is this, that some of it worked out, but a lot of times once you introduce that growth capital into these social purpose businesses, they kind of get stripped. They lose a lot of that meaning and purpose. And that idea of like venture capital with growth, with purpose, hasn't actually panned out in the same way we thought, you know. But that doesn't mean there are a lot of good private companies doing amazing work and with visionary leaders and using business and transforming supply chains and entrepreneurs doing work to transition a hotel chain off of plastic. And, you know, there are tons of good opportunities to do good in business. But the idea of social enterprise, as I understood it even in 2012, I think there's some questions there on whether that's actually the model we're
on. Still too early to tell. This morning I read on BBC and the homepage, I think McDonald's UK has committed to paper straws.
Right.
The 1.8 million straws a day in the UK are used. I mean, talk about social change, talk about impact, and you got to wonder how that decision was made internally, you know, what questions, you know, to your point earlier, what questions were being asked, right?
Exactly.
What's going on globally and so on. So are you saying that we didn't define this idea of social innovation well enough, or we're still figuring it out?
No, I don't know if it has anything to do with definition. I think it actually has to do with the constraints of the kind of capital that people took. You know, it's like the high growth venture capital dollars come with one principle, which is more faster, you know, and that's what they want. That's what's demanded of it. And if you layer that on to anything that has a social purpose that isn't totally aligned with the business interest, it falls apart. So it's, I think that doesn't mean there's no model for building sustainable social enterprises are building great private companies that do amazing good work for the world and the people and the planet. And there, it doesn't mean that there's not great opportunities for entrepreneurs, like whoever was there championing the cause of McDonald's and made the case and made the transition for the company into paper straws. You know, there's all these small moments each of us have that define purpose. But,
and would you agree with me that, okay, so you might look at that and go, oh, this was a small moment. Yes, I got paid to do this. I was a part of this. You know, I've been working with World Vision of late, and we had this huge G7 win here in Canada with respect to girls' education and the G7, and I've been working alongside of them from an advocacy perspective and so on. And yes, we're all a part of that, and in a sense, we're a small part of it, but this is a significant win. And so how do you intentionally celebrate that and say, hang on, there's a ton of purpose in this, there's meaning to be found here, and I need to celebrate, right? And
yeah.
and maybe I've answered some of those questions, but it's also going to give me the, I guess, the energy and the desire and the sense of purpose to continue on. Does that make sense?
Yeah. No, I mean, recognizing those moments, and you know, I think that's true for, as you're talking about movement organizing and celebrating the victories, and it's also true for our careers and
right.
Small moments when we recognize we've done something, we've grown, we've moved from a place where we were really uncomfortable learning this thing, a challenge, and now we feel pretty comfortable in that situation. And those moments are worth celebrating. One of my favorite chapters is called "Make Your Own Finish Line," and the principle is basically to do that, to not wait for someone else to tell you, you're doing a good job, you did it, because that person probably won't show up and you don't really want to have to ask them to do that. And it's like, how do you recognize those moments and so that you end up having more control?
Well, you know, it's so easy, right? So you can have 10 wonderful positive things happen to you in a day, and then at 4:20 somebody sends something to you negatively or takes you aside, or you're reprimanded, or you get that ugly email, and that's all you focus on, right? It's so easy to get distracted from the good that we are doing and the meaning that we are, the world that we are contributing to. Do you have any sort of thoughts about that or advice for folks about that, including me, Dev?
Man, I mean, I think that's the practice, right? That's,
yeah.
That's so much of the book is a practice.
Yes.
continually do every day. There's not a moment where you're like, I've got it figured out.
That's right.
It just doesn't happen. Life. I wish life was like that. Like yesterday, I came across a quote that I really love, which is, comparison is the thief of joy. And it's a Teddy Roosevelt quote. And comparison is the thief of joy. And I love it. And it's been going through my head for the last 24 hours because it is, we live in such a comparative culture, you know? And
right.
If there's anything that's a practice, it's that. Like, you have to consistently remind yourself, comparison is the thief of joy.
Comparison is the defeat, right? Is it?
But it's basically the idea that as soon as we like compare ourselves, you know, it came up in a conversation where somebody was actually negotiating for a salary and they had overheard that somebody else makes X amount. And so then they came back. They would have been perfectly happy. It was more than they would expected, but they came back and they were like, well, if that's the case, then I need this and this and this. And the whole thing fell apart.
Right,
you know?
Right.
And it's just like, you would have been perfectly happy. It actually fit everything that you wanted and you needed. And it just, you know, it's just that idea that.
Managing our own expectations, and we're back to sort of the daily practice of it all. I'm looking at the website 50waystogetajob.com, Dev, and you've got these 9 lovely boxes: starting, finding purpose, or finding my purpose, overwhelmed and stuck and happy, interviewing, very practical, and yet also some interesting sort of, as you, I think early on in our conversation today, talked about the emotional component of this. The word overwhelmed and stuck really stands out to me. What do you say to folks in later in life who are looking for that next phase in their career, or to the younger, generation coming out of university who are, you know, got all this passion, truckload of passion, and are running up against these brick walls.
Yeah.
Is this where your website really comes in handy? And also, I mean, obviously the book does, but the site is really practical too.
Yeah. I mean, you know, there's so many of the career books and the career advice out there is built for this like extroverted, high confidence person that can just go out there and, you know, network and meet people and go, go, go. And, you know, you can be the best. And I just wanted to provide something different. You know,
right.
If you're not that person at this moment, you don't need to be. It's okay. You don't need to be a different person when you go on to find a job. There's just different things to do. There's different work to do. There's different exercises to do. And that's true for a lot of people. Feel that discord or feel overwhelmed or stuck, because that's the idea of who we need to be in this moment. And it's not true. It's not true. You know, there are, if you aren't feeling like an extroverted person, there are great exercises to do and great work to do that will help you move towards a job that have to do with sitting quietly, that have to do with asking yourself what path you want to walk, or how to rechange and rethink your daily routine so that it systematically makes you feel the way you want to feel. There is a lot of good work to do, but it's just different than that extroverted drive methodology that we've been given.
You, one of the things that comes up for my students at teaching at Humber is this idea of networking. You know, it's just, it looks so, it's insurmountable, right? What does it even mean? You know,
right.
You know, does that mean I go to cocktail parties and do I hand things out on the corner? Like how do I actually network? It kind of presupposes a whole lot of things before you can even get to that phase, it seems to me.
Right. Yeah, and that's why I feel like if you're actually pursuing a question and you're interested in finding that answer and you're going to talks in order to learn, and even if you don't talk to anybody there, you're just going to listen and you're reading a book about that question you're trying to answer, you're going to end up meeting people along the way, and you're going to have something interesting to say because you're pursuing something. You have a directionality about the way that you're acting. And that is a different type of networking than just being like, hey, what do you do? Let me tell you what I do. Great. Let's do business together sometime. You know, like that, it's just a different type of thing when you're like, hey, I'm just trying to learn about, you know, oceans and what's
right.
going on in oceans, and here's what I've learned. This person said this, and what are you saying? What are you doing? You know, it's a different kind. You're moving onto the same side of the table as somebody instead of sitting across. And it's just a better way to interact.
Well, I think you've totally nailed it. I mean, it's out of the park as far as I'm concerned, because I so love the relational thread, the people component, if you will. You know, it's LinkedIn for the real world. You know, this is how you actually do LinkedIn. You know, you can do it digitally. You can go to those cocktail receptions, but there are all kinds of other ways. And it's really probably going to be rooted in questions, choice, intentionality, and actual human beings. Actual human contact, which is I don't know. I just think it's a really beautiful and brilliant thread through the book.
Thank you.
What why wasn't it 51 ways to get a job?
I don't know. It 50 seems like the right number.
and did you have to toss out 10 or 12 or 15 of them? Like, what, did you have 68 at one point or 112?
You know what, actually, if you actually look at the book, there's these field note sections at the end of each, which is kind of like more of like a philosophical inquiry. But they were all, when I went to write the initial draft, they were all in there like, you can't have more than 50. And I was like, okay, I'm going to do field notes. What about that? And so there's a little more than 50. But yeah,
that comes out more in the what's next component, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, the exercises. Yeah, you talk about short and long runways.
Yeah, exactly. And how much time you have in order to make your next thing work.
So, sadly, going to have to wrap it up here, Dev. But I'm having a great time chatting about this, and it really, you know, maybe in a few years, people are going to look back and go, "Hey, this wasn't such an unconventional guide after all."
I hope so.
You know what I mean? Like, I think that.
Not.
Yeah, because it's sort of where, I don't know, it's where the rubber meets the road. It's, to me, it's about, yeah, like I said, it's about knowledge and new perspective. It's wonderful, deeply philosophical, and yet so rooted in the real world and profoundly practical. So thanks for the book and for the conversation. Let's go back to the one thing. Make a list. Just remind us again about what that means.
Yeah, to make a to-learn list. So it's one activity you can do is make a list of everything you want to learn, and it can be personal, it can be professional, it can be any aspect of your life that you want to learn. And then ask yourself what job, career, job title, job description can teach you the most number of things on that list. And what's surprising about it is you'll find jobs you would have least expected and industries you may never have thought of working in, but they may be the perfect next step for what you.
Stay focused. Is that stay focused. Love it. And I guess too, would you say that find a way to remind yourself of this stuff?
Yeah, I mean, it's a practice. I mean, that's why this book only works if you do the work, you know.
Right.
It's not the life hack quick way to get a job, but it is the way, and there's a lot of different paths to take.
Which is precisely why you say don't read the book cover to cover.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. No, I good. I hope we've got people's attention and interest. Check it out. 50 ways to get a job. I was trying to find the publisher on the back of the book. Okay. 50 ways to get a job. An unconventional guide to finding work on your terms. Dev Ajal, we're just chatting with him today about his new book. You can find it online. And don't forget to check out 50 ways to get a job.com. Dev, thanks a lot for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Thanks. Great talking.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.